I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Take the other day it came up. We had a chance to, we were asked, hey, do you want Bob Costas on the show? Why wouldn't we? Bob Costas.
You even have to ask that, Sam, too?
It's a legend. He is a legend in terms of what he's done, versatility. He's just a sharp mind that he's really been a leader in the industry for a long time. My entire life, really. And he actually went to the Mets fantasy camp with my dad in the 80s. I think Costas was playing a little second base. That's what my dad told me. Bob, Tiki and Tierney, how are you today, buddy? What's going on?
You know, I was playing second base.
There you go.
And Clint Hurdle,
yes,
managed my team.
Yes.
That was the point in his life when he was sort of between jobs.
Uh-huh.
And he had played briefly for the Mets, uh-huh, and he managed my group of Met campers. And as I remember, I was able to make solid contact a few times, and I did play second base. But now let's rewind a little bit.
Okay.
You're bagging on Carmelo. Well, looking 50. Mm. People are always saying to me, hey, Bob, you look like you couldn't be more than 50. That is a compliment.
It's a different...
No,
it's a different,
Carmelo, he looks like he's 50. That's fine. He's in the prime of his life and the prime of his career.
It's a different scale, Bob.
Perspective, Bob.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's all
hey, I'll take 50.
Yeah, right? You know, it's interesting you bring up Clint Hurdle because he's still the skip of the Pirates.
And right.
You've watched this, as BT and I have watched this. BT's an advocate. He's taught me so much about the game of baseball. But the feel manager is gone, right? It's all numbers. It's all metrics. When you see that, do you love the new trend with data driving some of these decisions, or do you like the old school guy a little bit? You've seen both sides of it, Bob.
You know, I think it has to be a blend of the two. And I think Alex Cora showed that all year long. He's a young manager. It was his first managerial position, although he had been the bench coach for A.J. Hinch in Houston. But it was his first managerial position. He isn't even in his mid-40s yet. He just turned 43. So he's with the new wave, but he also makes some decisions, based on instinct and gut feeling in that particular situation. So I think analytics are very important. I'm interested in the data, but they cannot be the be-all and end-all, and they cannot always apply to every situation. The data is based on macro, but the macro is made up of hundreds or maybe thousands of micros. If you ever played in the days before people started to organize fantasy leagues and you had all DraftKings and everything, we used to sit around and play Stratomatic football or Stratomatic baseball. You ever do that, or APBA baseball?
Yeah, I did. I got to be honest. I found it boring because video games were just invented. Yeah, I'm going back to the early 80s, Bob.
I'm ahead of you, and there were no video games. And I thought it was incredible that I could pretend that Willie Mays was facing Whitey Ford.
Uh-huh.
The point of all this was, if Willie Mays that year hit .315 with 48 homers in 540 at-bats, and you send him up to bat 540 times in Stratomatic, his probability of doing that was exactly the same all 540 times. But we know that all 540 at-bats of Willie Mays' season were not identical.
Mm-hmm.
And every situation in and of itself does not comport with the macro. And what might make sense to do on June 10th against Pittsburgh doesn't necessarily make sense to do in the fourth game of the World Series.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. And, you know, I want to throw this by, and there's so many things we do want to throw by, but I have to get this out because we had Tiki, we were out this day. It was over the summer one day, and we had Joe Morgan on.
Yeah.
And I threw this by Joe, and I think you're the perfect broadcaster to ask this of because you've done every sport, even going back to the ABA with the St. Louis Spirit.
Yep.
And I look at the 70s. I was born in 73, Bob, but obviously knowing my baseball history, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the early 70s with the A's, with Catfish and Sal Bando and Reggie and all those guys, and you just seamlessly transition to the big red machine, and then eventually you get into the Yankees back-to-back in 77 and 78. It's my contention, although I'll defer to you, that the 70s has more dynasties and more powerful dynasties of any other sport of any other decade. I hope I presented that. Does that make sense? Is there another decade with as many highly regarded dynasties as the 70s baseball gives us? I don't think there is.
No, not multiples. The Celtics in the 50s and then into the 60s won 11 in 13 years. The Bulls obviously won 6 in 8 years and might have made it 8 in a row if Michael had played all of those 2 seasons in between. He missed one entirely and most of another one. And then there was almost a seamless handoff to 3 straight for Kobe and Shaq, with the Spurs winning the first of their 5 in 1999. So you have some of that, and you have the Packers and the Steelers and the 49ers in football. But I understand the point you're making about baseball in the 70s. You could go back to the Yankees from 1949 to 1964. What's that? That's 16 seasons, yep. And they won the pennant 14 times.
Yeah.
But when you get to the tail end of what you were talking about in baseball in the 70s, the 77, 78 Yankees, that's just the beginning of free agency.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Bob Housem, who ran the Cincinnati Reds, saying after the Reds swept the Yankees in 76 for their second championship in a row, and they had won 4 pennants between 70 and 76, he saw free agency coming, and he was a hard-line, old-line guy who never would fit into what has become modern baseball. And he said with obvious regret, this may be the last truly great team you see because we won't be able to hold teams together anymore. Now, it turns out that's not entirely true, but that group of teams you mentioned in the 70s, and you can throw in the Baltimore Orioles.
Yes, you can.
Even though they lost 2 of the 3 series.
Yes.
They lost in 69 to the Mets and in 71 to the Pirates. They were actually the best team in baseball all 3 years, 69, 70, 71. Then that gives way almost, as you say, seamlessly to the A's, who give way to the Reds, who give way to the Yankees. So, yeah, that was that sort of passing of the baton during that era in baseball.
And then even the Dodgers coming up, who eventually won it in 81. And it's, I wanted to throw that by you. The great Bob Costas is with us here on Tiki and Tierney.
Bob, your other love would be football, because you did it for so long, and that's how we became colleagues at NBC and Football Night in America. And you're working on this Concussion Legacy Foundation media project, and it's interesting because I think so much of the vernacular that's thrown around the concussion issue that's dominated the NFL for the last decade or so sometimes gets misused, and it's often misunderstood. Tell us exactly what you're looking to get from professional journalists, or at least teach professional journalists, and also some college journalists that want to get into this profession.
Well, the first thing I want to say is that I'm not the person, I wouldn't be presumptuous enough to tell my colleagues, many of whom are my peers and my friends, what they should do and how they should do it. I think the people who do the frontline NFL games have educated themselves, for the most part, about concussions. They know the NFL's ever-evolving concussion protocols. They're aware of the severity of it. And they're less likely, especially the professional announcers and most of the former players turned broadcasters, know not to say he got his bell rung, or it's a stinger, or he's shaking off the cobwebs, or that it's automatically a mark of toughness to go back into the game immediately, even though you may be woozy. I think we've all come to that realization. What my role is in helping the Concussion Legacy Foundation, because they knew I was interested in the issue, they came to me and asked me to put them in touch with some of the frontline communications schools in the country. So I started with my own alma mater, Syracuse, and the Newhouse School has begun this program for aspiring sports broadcasters and sports writers. So has the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern, where J.A. Adande, who was a longtime television personality and writer at the L.A. Times, is now a professor. And soon enough, Boston University will have it, and perhaps the University of Missouri, and it will spread. And so my job was only to kind of act as a go-between. And then there's an introductory video that they put together that I'm on, and Andrea Kramer is on, and J.A. Adande is on. But the real experts are people like Ann McKee and Dr. Robert Cantu and Chris Nowinski himself and Bennett Amalu, Dr. Bennett Amalu, who was played by Will Smith in the movie Concussion, even though he's not directly affiliated with the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Those are the true experts. So my role would only be to primarily tell up-and-coming broadcasters, hey, take a look at this video, take a look at this curricula, read Bennett Omalu's memoir, read what's out there from the Concussion Legacy Foundation, and consider it part of your job to be as familiar with this information as a layman can be, just the same way as you ought to be familiar with the rules of the sport you cover.
Yeah,
that's simple.
Yeah, Bob, do you think that's good? The emphasis that the league has put on this is really changing? Because sometimes I see a guy, he gets popped. He fakes it. He gets up and he goes off. There's supposed to be spotters. I don't know if there's actually any spotters. But do you think this is, I know there are, but I don't know if they actually do what they're supposed to do. Because sometimes I can watch from television and say, that guy is knocked out. He's trying not to pretend. He doesn't want to lose his position. Right? Is this working the way that the NFL envisioned it would work? Or is there still work to be done with the concussion issue in the National Football League and really in the lower levels as well?
Oh, there's ongoing work to be done. And according to the Concussion Legacy Foundation, close to half of youth football coaches are not fully familiar or nearly as familiar as they should be with the signs of head injuries, the proper teaching techniques. A good percentage of people who let their kids play are not sufficiently aware of the issue overall. And, you know, you can respect the decision to allow a kid to play. I don't think personally that anyone should play contact football before at least the age of 15, and you can learn some of the basics of the game by playing flag football. But in any case, a parent should make that decision as an informed decision. And we assume, because we do it for a living and we follow all this stuff, that everybody knows, at least in general, what we know. And you'd be surprised how many people somehow are not really aware of this issue. And so the public needs to be educated. Youth coaches need to be better educated. And then there's a big question, and it's a philosophical question that will take a long time to discuss, more time than we have here, which is that no matter what the league does, whether it's out of conscience and honest concern, which I think some of it is, or whether it's a simple business decision because they know they could be losing some people who are ambivalent about the game, whatever their motivation is, the question is, can you ever truly make this kind of contact football safe enough that a considerable percentage of those who play will not suffer some sort of significant brain trauma that they'll pay for down the line? I don't know what the answer to that is, because as we all know, or at least the three of us know, it isn't just diagnosed concussions, and you don't have to be unconscious to have a concussion, but on top of that, it isn't just diagnosed concussions, it's all the hundreds, if not thousands, of subconcussive hits that go by unnoticed, but that cumulatively can lead to CTE and often some often tragic consequences down the road. So this is a big question, and it's a fundamental question that faces the most popular and profitable sport in America. Actually, it's the most popular thing in all of American entertainment. It gets the highest ratings of anything on television. In theory, you could play baseball without performance-enhancing drugs and without steroids, and they have reduced it to a significant extent. You can play hockey without fights. We'll never live to see it, but you could align academics and athletics enough so that much of Division I college sports, at least basketball and football, which are the primary ones, wouldn't be a sham, that that'd actually be an alignment of athletics and academics. In theory, you could do all that.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamental question for football is, even in theory, can you play football the way we've been accustomed to either playing it or watching it be played without a sizable percentage of the participants suffering severe consequences?
I don't think so. I mean, that's,
I don't think so either.
I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I think the answer is no.
I sell this to BT all the time, Bob. You got to be somewhat crazy.
Yeah.
And a little bit off your rocker to play the game, football. And you some guys realize this pretty early, and they still play anyways.
Mm-hmm. Bob, go ahead, Bob. Go ahead.
Well, it's a risk-reward thing.
Yeah.
And I think that we respect a Chris Borland, promising linebacker from the 49ers, who said it's not worth the risk. And then we respect those who say, I'm fully aware of this information, but considering the rewards, my lust for competition, what I can do for my family, the financial rewards, I am willing to take that risk in return for the rewards. You could respect either decision as long as it's an informed decision.
100%. Yeah. There's no doubt. Bob Costas is with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. I wish we had more time, but I want to throw this by. I think there's a good way to end it up here, Bob. You look at the inherent issues that, football faces, head trauma. Mm-hmm. Hockey has certain inherent issues. Mm-hmm. Ice time, rink time is very challenging for a lot of people. There's been a decline, although it seems to be repairing itself a bit, but a dearth of African-Americans with baseball, unlike the 70s and the 80s, where there were so many prominent, great black players. Now it's not quite what it used to be. Every sport has a challenge. Which sport do you think right now, though, is able to kind of plow past those impediments and flourish the most? Which sport is set up for the next 10, 15, 20 years to do the best, do you think?
I'd say either the NBA,
uh-huh.
and despite its problems with national television ratings, baseball, because baseball's problems, pace of game and whatnot, are theoretically fixable.
Yeah.
And so, too, are hockey's. I mean, you could legislate a lot of the contact that leads to the possibility of CTE, which some people don't want to acknowledge, but it only makes sense. It may not be to the exact same extent in every sport. But if we've known for our entire lifetimes and before any of us were born that people could be, quote, punch drunk and have dementia from being fighters, it only makes sense that people who have constant contact, even if they're wearing helmets, and we now know that helmets do not protect against brain damage, they protect against skull fractures, it only made sense that we should have made that linkage to football sooner and made that linkage as well to hockey. But you could legislate that out of hockey. I come back to the thing about football. The very nature of the game makes it more difficult to address its most fundamental problem. But I think the NBA and Major League Baseball, as long as they don't compare themselves in television ratings and overall popularity for the moment to football, I think the NBA and MLB are in very good shape.
Bob Costas, he is the man. Legendary, great, awesome. Wish we had a little more time, Bob. I truly do. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Brandon, Tiki, always good to talk to you. Take care.
Take care, Bob.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.